Well, the thousands of people joining long queues outside Centrelink offices tells us one thing for sure. The unemployment rate is about to soar. Economists are rapidly revising up their forecasts as the coronavirus shutdowns hit labour-intensive sectors, including tourism, that was the first to go, hospitality, now entertainment, with Westpac predicting it could climb as high as 11%, and that's a level not seen since the 1991 recession. This comes as businesses brace for even stricter shutdowns to contain the pandemic, with more shutdowns to start from midnight to tonight. But in a bid to save jobs, the Hospitality Union has agreed to unprecedented changes to the award. And the Prime Minister says it's important to ensure people can continue to work throughout this health crisis.
Now, if you ask me, who's an essential worker? Someone who has a job. Everyone who has a job in this economy is an essential worker. Every single job that is being done in our economy with these severe restrictions that is taking place is essential.
That's the Prime Minister last night. To discuss all this, we're joined now by ACTU Secretary Sally McManus. Innes Willox is the Chief Executive of the Australian Industry Group, and Dr. Richard Dennis is Chief Economist with the Australia Institute. Welcome to you all.
Good morning.
Richard Dennis, some economists believe up to 2 million Australians could be made jobless as this shutdown intensifies, which would see unemployment rise to above 11%. We haven't seen that since the 1991 recession. How bad might it get?
Fran, I think it's going to get a lot worse than people realise. I mean, the thing to understand is this is not a cyclical downturn, and the lessons from the last 50 years don't apply. We just can't underestimate the fact that at a time where governments would usually be stimulating the economy, we're having to shut down tourism, shut down retail, shut down huge parts of the labour force. And the long-term consequences of this are enormous. The governments were talking about being temporary and targeted, but there's no rule book for what we're about to do. We've never entered a slowdown while shutting down enormous employing sectors. So we need to get over this temporary and targeted, and we need to start thinking about structural solutions that can be sustained for a long time.
All right, before I come to the others, what's the structural solution number one that you would recommend?
Oh, it's quite obvious. The public sector needs to be much, much larger for the next probably 2 years. And we need to invent new public sector structures to create large amounts of demand. You can't do trickle-down stimulus. While giving money to businesses might keep them afloat. That money we're giving to business isn't giving them an incentive to do anything new. We need the public sector to step in, as we saw yesterday, and employ thousands of more people in our welfare system. We need to employ tens of thousands of people to support our health sector. And we also need to do very simple things to pump not just money, but jobs into the labour market. All those empty schools need to be painted and recarpeted. Kevin Rudd's school halls are 10 years old. They all need to be painted, and they need to be painted now. We need not just to put money into the economy, we have to put jobs into the economy, and only the public sector can do that.
Innes Willox, does it sound like a good idea to you to use the public sector to try and soak up some of these people who are on the unemployment queue? We know it's over a million. There was already 3.2 million hits on the MyGov website yesterday, so it's going to be in the millions, isn't it?
Well, Fran, we are going to go through some pretty tough times, and I think that's why it's important that measures are taken and kept in place to try to keep as many sectors of the economy operating and as many businesses within those sectors operating. Look, we don't know where this is going to go. We've seen estimates saying that one third of businesses across Australia could have to shut down as a result of this as time goes by. So this is going to be deep and it's going to be long lasting. Part of the problem is that once you shut a sector of the economy down, it's impossible really to reopen it until we're on top of this. And that's why it's very important that we do all we can to keep businesses alive and afloat at the moment. And we're seeing businesses try to be very inventive, but this is sort of the great intersection of a health crisis and an economic crisis. And what we're saying to our members is that in the end is going to be whether you can meet those health requirements, which will determine whether you can keep operating.
Yes.
And that's what businesses are trying to adapt to it now. So, look, we're hearing estimates of 2 million unemployed. Who knows? This is the problem. We just don't know.
I mean, who knows? But you're right. The one key aim here is to try and keep some of these sectors alive, some of these businesses afloat. And a key part of the government's second economic package was to provide up to $100,000 in cash flow assistance to small businesses to help them stay open and to keep staff on. Those queues outside Centrelink suggest that's not been enough of an incentive. What are you hearing from your members? Is that what they're using that money for? Is it working? And what else could the government be doing right now to stop job shedding?
Well, that money is still flowing through, so it hasn't totally flowed through yet. So, as I said, you've got this intersection between health needs, so parts of the economy are being told to shut down, and we're trying to keep, you know, significant parts of the economy alive. If education shuts down, let's put it that way, that's going to be hundreds of thousands of jobs that go overnight. That's why we need to keep that alive. The one point here I'd make, Fran, very loud and clear, is that we all recognise governments are trying to do the right thing, but there is a lot of chaos and a lot of confusion at our state borders at the moment as state governments implement different measures around movement of people and movement of goods. They're different from state to state, and they're being almost made up as they go along. Some states are letting freight through. Others are saying they're not going to. Some are leaving it up to police officers to decide what's essential or not. It's incredibly important, and I can't stress this enough. We have to have continuity around what is happening at our state borders to allow the movement of goods to occur. Once we stop moving goods, then our economy will atrophy very quickly. And it's essential to get this right. Businesses are totally confused at the moment about what they can and can't do.
And just before I move to Sally McManus, just on that question of trying to keep workers tethered to the businesses so that they can then be taken up when the economy does eventually come back, should the government be doing more? So there will be a call, and I'm sure Sally McManus would be backing this, for the government to actually be paying a proportion of wages as they are in the United Kingdom, for instance. Do you support that or not?
Well, there's a range of measures I think the government are going to have to look at, and I'll make two very quick points, Fran. One is we've made it very clear to government that the assistance for small businesses is good at the moment and appropriate, but it's inevitable that is going to have to extend in some way or another to bigger businesses so that they can keep their supply chains alive. And that's the crucial thing here. We've never seen it. You know, we've always said the economy's interconnected. It's crucial that, you know, that bigger businesses have the supports they need as well. The second point I'd make, and Sally probably want to elaborate on this, is that we have been having very good conversations with the ACTU and unions around, and I know Sally hates the word flexibility, but I'll use it, but trying to get some more flexibility into the award system on a temporary basis so that employers can have the ability to keep more people at work through this period. And look, there's a lot of good work being done there. We're not quite done yet, but I think all the signs from the conversations yesterday are that we'll get there. But it's essential that we have measures which are temporary, whether that be for 6 or 12 months, you know, which are balanced. Okay. To get us through this, and we're getting close to that. So that cooperation is fantastic.
Let's go to Sally McManus now. Sally, on that, there was a groundbreaking development, seemed to me anyway, yesterday with the Hospitality Union, the United Workers Union, reaching this agreement with hoteliers that would allow them to cut full-time employee hours and send workers on leave at half pay to stop job shedding, basically. Giving up hard-won conditions is not something, you know, unions would usually do. Has it come to that, and will there be more unions doing the same sort of negotiation?
Well, the first thing I want to say is the last 48 hours have been absolutely shocking time for working Australians, shocking time. And I can go into that at length. But in terms of what you're talking about now, essentially what's happened, this is the hospitality award. So you know how hard hospitality has been hit, especially with cafes closing as well. So this would allow employers and employees to take annual leave with less notice, and also to have temporary reduction of hours, all sensible things that just need to happen to keep people in jobs. But going to your other points, the main thing is, and Innes said it, we all know it, is that there's so much confusion amongst employers as well as workers. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, what's happening is that employers are letting all their casuals go in lots of circumstances. And remember, one in four workers in Australia are casuals. And so they're lined up outside Centrelink. Plus, there's shutdowns all over the place. They're all lined up outside Centrelink. There should be no lines outside Centrelink. If we had a wage subsidy like the UK, employers would know 80% would be covered. Workers would know 80% would be covered. They'd be able to negotiate the taking of leave. They'd be able to do all of those things to keep people in jobs. It's a much better way of saving jobs at this particular time.
Just on that, though, the British system, as I understand, it's 80% of workers' salaries. But as I am led to believe, that doesn't include sole traders. So all those people who work for themselves, they don't get anything. It's only those who have jobs that get 80% of their salary. There's an equity issue there, isn't there? I mean, what the Australian government is offering, at least, is everybody the same level of extra payment.
Yeah, but that same level of extra payment, 75% of the minimum wage is $550 a week, which is a massive pay cut for a whole lot of people. So,
yes,
of course, sole traders should be looked after. Of course they should. There's lots of people in the gig economy that are really, really badly affected by this, unless you're a delivery driver, I guess. And so, you know, addressing that issue. And the other thing is that people are having to wait 5 weeks for the doubling of the Newstart or the Job Seekers Allowance. 5 weeks. People can't wait 5 weeks for that extra money. That's something that needs to be addressed urgently. But the main thing is that if we can move to a guaranteed wage subsidy of a percentage of the median wage, this will bring certainty. It will save jobs. At the moment, people are basically, employers are thinking it's okay to let people go because the social security system will look after them, and that's just not the case.
All right. We only have just a few minutes left before the news. We're speaking with Richard Dennis, Sally McManus and Innes Willocks. Let's talk about where the jobs might be. Richard Dennis, you talked about the public sector. But the fact is that some sectors are needing more workers. Centrelink is one of them. Qantas workers have been laid off, but Coles is trying to see if they can soak up one of those. But we've also heard that the hotels, pubs and pokies arms of Woolworths, that's the ALH group, has stood down about 8,000 workers. Woolies says it will try to redeploy these people. You know, should there be some onus on our major companies who in good years post lots of profits to do more to be hiring people? And should the government be stepping in any way? I'll ask this of Richard and of Innes and of Sally.
Yes, of course. And look, the public sector needs to expand to meet the urgent crises we have. But the public sector can also create enormous demand for the private sector services we need. What is unavoidable is that a million people are going to lose their jobs. But what is entirely within our control is what those million people do for the next year. All the beautiful Art Deco ocean baths in Australia were built during the Depression. During the Depression, we knew what to do when the private sector wasn't employing people. During the Depression, we employed people to build things that would last and provide benefits. The public sector is the only institution with a balance sheet big enough to step in and create demand for people to do things. Whether they're public employees or private employees, the demand is going to come from the government or it's not going to come from anywhere.
Innes Willocks, you represent some major companies. Are any of them looking at hiring? And can you see, are you talking to people about where gaps might emerge, where there's opportunity and need to hire?
Look, there is hiring occurring. You've seen Telstra say they're hiring more people. You've seen Coles and Woolworths saying they're doing the same. Look, some sectors are really struggling at the moment to keep up with demand. The extra shifts are being put on where they can. You're looking at food production, packaging, pharmaceuticals, you know, cleaning products. Obviously, companies in those sectors are just up against it at the moment, trying to keep up with demand. So there are opportunities out there at the moment. To be honest, you know, businesses are trying to hang on to what they've got where they can, because they know once they lose skills and they lose staff, it's very hard to get that back. The other point I'd make here, just briefly, Fran, is that, look, one day when this is over, business just won't return to normal the next day. It's going to take time for business to get up and running again, to be in a position to pay bills, to pay landlords, to pay creditors, all of that. So whatever assistance is in place has got to last maybe 3 to 6 months longer than this.
And Sally, just before I come to you, just on what change might happen, Innes Willocks, could this crisis trigger a rethink about our dependency on imports? We import 90% of our medical supplies, for example. Could it kickstart a renaissance in manufacturing here?
Fran, I know you're pressed for time. I just make this point. I think there were very clear signs of that occurring when China was in the deepest part of its difficulties here. You were seeing a lot of moves towards onshoring, reshoring here. Quick point, I think this has exposed more than anything the fragility of parts of the economy, and my prediction will be that post this there will be a significant push towards doing more back in Australia while keeping import and supply lines open. But I think overall self-reliance will sort of become more of a mantra.
And Sally McManus, a final word from you?
I agree with that. I agree with what Richard said about public sector and what Innes said about manufacturing more onshore. The other thing we've got to consider is there's an immediate issue about job shortages. So the healthcare sector at the moment, all the nurses, all the healthcare workers are preparing for a massive surge of cases. And this needs to be our first priority, getting enough workers in that sector. In 2 weeks' time, they expect to be hit with that surge, and all preparation needs to go towards that. That needs to be our first priority. At the same time, call centres are desperate for people because the whole of the Philippines has shut down, supermarkets, delivery drivers. But the first place has got to be the healthcare centre sector.
Sally McManus, thank you very much for joining us. Innes Willocks, Richard Jenness, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sally McManus is the Secretary of the ACTU. Innes Willocks is the Chief Executive of the Australian Industry Group. And Dr. Richard Dennis is the Chief Economist with the Australia Institute.